Hello, and welcome back to the Degree of Freedom podcast. My name is Jonathan Haber, and as longtime Degree of Freedom readers and listeners know, in addition to attempting to learn the equivalent of a BA in just 12 months using only free online resources, I've also been using both the degreeoffreedom.org website and this podcast to explore the MOOC phenomena from as many different angles as possible. Over the last several months, you've seen the components of MOOCs taken apart and analyzed, heard about options for obtaining college credit for completing a MOOC, read about how MOOCs fit into the wider educational economy, as well as listened to people behind MOOC organizations like edX and Coursera, as well as other thought leaders in the area of free learning. But as interesting as it's been to explore these education-related topics, remember there's a whole world that exists outside the classroom, brick and mortar, or virtual. And in this world, one of the key questions everyone asks before, during, and especially after being a student is, how can I earn a living? I happened to graduate during the very early years of entrepreneurship mania, when it was just becoming socially acceptable for younger people to consider starting their own business rather than join someone else's upon graduation. But for most of the people my age and older, the conventional pathway after college, perhaps with a brief respite for travel abroad with a copy of Let's Go under your arm, was to check the newspaper classified ad section for jobs, generate a typo-free cover letter, and enclose it in an envelope with an attractive resume, preferably one you had offset printed on high-quality paper. Then you waited for the phone, a landline, to ring. And if you were lucky, you'd get a call back, which would be followed by lots of forms to fill out, followed by one or more interviews, followed by acceptance or rejection, the latter usually delivered via mail. Now, people who talk about how MOOCs and other technology-driven learning tools will transform education are usually engaging in speculation. But if you want to see what an industry like education might look like after technology has turned it upside down, you could do worse than studying another industry that has already undergone a technology-driven revolution, employment. Gone are the days, for instance, of the classified ad, one of the major factors behind the impending death of the daily newspaper, by the way. For job postings are no longer printed, but are listed on endless job boards, either general-purpose ones like Monster or Career Builder, or specialized boards focusing on a single industry or geographical region. And when you find a job you'd like on one of those boards, clicking the apply button pulls you into one of those behind-the-scenes online applications, called an applicant tracking system if you're interested, where everything you once stuffed into an envelope is now submitted online. These changes in how one applies for a job is especially illuminating with regard to the MOOC phenomena beyond just general move to digital. For the automation of every aspect of employee recruitment, screening, and selection, not to mention other steps in the HR process, has created issues not just of technology, but of scale. For back when people had to type something up and stuff it into an envelope, the number of applicants for any particular job was small enough that the person who went through those mailed-in resumes was either the person who would choose a winner, or at least work directly for those decision-makers and thus understood the nature of the job and the company doing the hiring. But today, when applying for a job mostly consists of cutting and pasting, the number of applicants for any particular position could be in the hundreds or thousands, far more than any person or even a small team of people can evaluate effectively. That's why many online job applications include questionnaires and assessments, tools designed to filter and rank candidates based on supposedly objective metrics that can allow the human beings looking over these submissions to ignore candidates who don't make it through a filter who end up at the bottom of some automated ranking scheme. So just like MOOC classes, modern employment is characterized by technology enabling a vast increase in participation, which has had the unfortunate effect of breaking or at least loosening the once existing bonds between human beings, be they employee and employer or teacher and student. Which is why it's no accident that both MOOC developers and employers are looking to technology, the very thing which enabled both the positives and negatives of scaling, as a solution that might create new ways of connecting the very same people it so recently separated. Getting back to employment, one of the great ironies in this field is that even though the number of people applying for any particular job is much higher than it once was, finding qualified candidates for a position, particularly in areas like programming, design, sales, and management, is as elusive as ever. So why employers tend to spend so much time and money trying to grab the attention of skilled potential hires. Today's guests are from a company that has come up with an interesting means of doing so, by starting their own MOOC program. Allison Farmer and Matthew Grant are responsible for Gymnasium, or perhaps Gymnasium, a new free massive online learning service offered by Aquent, one of the world's most successful staffing firms specializing in finding jobs for creative professionals. I first met the CEO of Aquent, John Chung, back during those early days of entrepreneurship I mentioned at the start of this podcast, when I just started a desktop publishing firm and John, whose company offered Macintosh training out of a second floor office in Harvard Square at the time, taught me how to use the cutting edge Mac I had just leased, an SE with not one, but two floppy drives, if I recall. Aquint has since grown into a global staffing powerhouse that is the first company I can think of that is experimenting with free MOOCs as a means of both improving skills and attracting talent. So let's hear more about what they're doing. Allison, Matthew, welcome to Degree of Freedom.
Hey, thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan.
So Allison, maybe you could start. Can you tell listeners about Aquint, including how you got started and who you employ and how you select people for job placement?
Absolutely. So we are a staffing company that specializes in helping digital creative marketing folks get temporary work as contractors. We're a global organization and we've been around for well over 2 decades working with everything from Fortune 1000 companies to small boutique agencies. So anything creative is definitely in our wheelhouse.
And Matthew, what made you decide to get into the MOOC game?
Well, last summer we ran a program called something called Summer of Learning, where we offered some courses, really, I want to say 4 or 5 classes, Allison should probably correct me, about HTML5 and things like that. And we set up the classes, we offered them to whoever wanted to sign up. We had about 10,000 people sign up for them. And we were actually able to place a number of people who had sort of raised their hands or gotten in touch with us via this. So we thought this could be a sort of a beautiful thing where we could offer free, high-quality training courses to people for free, so that's the open part, but that it would also then actually serve a business purpose for us by helping us identify and find new people who we could place with our clients. So it was like a win-win, I guess, as they say in the business world. People could really learn skills that are important to them that can help them with their careers, whether they work with us or not. But it would also put us in touch with a motivated community of people who might also be able to help out our clients.
And can you describe what's going to be offered via your Aquint Gymnasium program?
Yeah, I can take this one. We actually have our first course live right now, and it's Coding for Designers, and sort of the subtitle for the course is Turn Your Comps into Code and Be the Designer Developers Love to Work With, which is a bit of a mouthful, but it's, I think, a really good example of what we're trying to do. So we think we're in a pretty unique position to understand where there are skill gaps, and we fill so many orders on a daily basis that we can almost see the needle moving in real time and see gaps as they're emerging. So that's the primary purpose of this, is as we identify those gaps, to bring to market courses that can help us take an existing pool of talent and layer on 1 or 2 or however many new and emerging skill sets that will make those people more marketable. So in this case, it's taking designers who don't yet know code and making sure that they have some HTML and CSS, because that is one of the things that we're hearing repeatedly. And I think overall, that's the flavor of course that we'll be offering with Aquint Gymnasium. The other types of things that we have coming down the pike, we've already started developing a responsive web design course. I mean, obviously, that's all the buzz right now. We're also looking at some options like with jQuery. So anything that's in the creative space, I could see us eventually having a really robust catalog. Unfortunately, you can only eat an elephant one bite at a time. So we're honing in on the areas where there is a most pressing need and it's popping up. And we're hearing repeatedly from employers that they're struggling to find these type of people because it, to Matt's point, seems like a win-win.
Right. And if I could just add to that, Jonathan, as Allison said, what's informing our choice of courses is the research that we do with our clients and our constant interaction with them. I mean, they ask us for stuff they can't find or for people with skills that they can't find. So we know what's missing out there, but we also do a deeper dive to try to get a little more precise about this, because the types of courses we're offering are not beginner type courses. So we're not, hey, you want to be a web designer, you know, we're going to teach you web design from the ground up. So even the Coding for Designers course, you already have to have design skills. You have to know how to use the Creative Suite, and you have to be a professional designer. But the idea is that, yes, there is work for people with those design skills, but if you just incrementally increased that skill with, for example, just teaching people the basics of HTML and CSS, it's going to make them more valuable to the people they're already working with, but it's also going to open up new opportunities for them. So what we were trying to do is, by having such a close connection to the business world and understanding what skills are missing, what skills are most in demand, and then trying to find a group of people who, if we just taught them a little more knowledge or a very specific practical skill that's really in demand, that it's going to improve their job and career opportunities, and it's going to make them more valuable to the customers, whether they're our clients or anyone they might be working for. So trying to kind of thread the needle here of how can we just bump people's skills up just to get them to the next level without having to like build them up from the ground floor.
And that targeting, is that sort of what distinguishes you from services like, say, lynda.com, for example?
Yeah, it's a lot of resources out there that will teach people from soup to nuts. Here's web design, here's how to use Photoshop and stuff like that. For us, we're trying to do kind of bite-sized chunks so that you can just incrementally improve your skill set to just get to that next level. So it's targeted to these very specific in-demand skills based on what businesses are telling us are in demand.
And Allison, when most people think of MOOCs, they think of courses coming from major universities and being offered via Udacity, edX, or Coursera. I'm curious, what makes Gymnasium a MOOC versus one of the many outlets for professional training?
Really good question. And I think it's kind of a fun question because the idea of MOOCs is evolving. But our interpretation, we're being pretty literal and looking at the fact that we want to offer something that is massive, that's open, and it's an online course. So for us, we really are opening it up to the world. Anyone who wants to take the courses is invited to. They don't have to have any previous association with Aquent. They're welcome just to hop in and take it. And our hope is that as this snowballs, that it will become even more massive. I think from our initial pilot that we did last summer, we had over 10,000 registrants. We just opened registration on this latest course a couple weeks ago, and we already have 7,500 people engaged in the program. So I think it definitely hits the mark in terms of massive, at least for a company that's offering up free education. So I think that that's probably why we're looking at it as massively open online course versus Aquent is now just putting out professional training. It's really sort of the spirit of it. It is a nice thing to open up to the world.
If I could also just add to that, Allison. So it's interesting because we do associate MOOCs, and most of the controversy, such as it is for MOOCs in general, are associated with higher education, with universities, with, as you mentioned, edX and Udacity and Coursera and Harvard and MIT and Stanford and Berkeley, et cetera. The thing is, if a MOOC just is a massive, open, free online course, then yes, these are MOOCs as well. But I think the real differentiator goes back to what we were just talking about, and that's this very specific practical focus and really a very practical workforce development focus. Yeah, you can take an artificial intelligence class at Stanford through your MOOC, but that's not necessarily going to get you a job. It's not even going to make you a person who can create artificial intelligence programs necessarily. You know, a lot of times university courses tend to be higher level. They tend to be more broad. These things are very, very focused. And so I think that's what makes it, on the one hand, a MOOC, but also separates it from the MOOCs that you would get at the university level. Just it's much more tied, we think, to the real world and what employers are demanding and what employees and working professionals need in order to find work.
Really good point. If you distill it down, it is, I think, the practical application of what we're teaching. It's not theory-based. We're not offering classes just because we think they're popular. We're offering them because we know there's a need for these skills to exist, and we're trying to teach them in a way that is very hands-on, very sort of applied versus here's the overall theory of building a website. It's hands-on, and people should be walking away from our courses with real samples and an ability to demonstrate what they learned as part of the interview process.
And you guys just brought up employers, so I'd like to switch gears a little bit. And Allison, as an employer, have you encountered applicants who've included MOOC certificates or other forms of alternative academic credential on their resumes or job applications recently?
We have. I actually did a search in our database to see, and we are seeing increasing numbers of applicants that are including programs on their resumes that they have participated in. I think it's an interesting and emerging credential because at this point, I think people aren't quite sure what it means. Unlike an established university where if you see that somebody has, you know, a BA from Harvard, you know in loose terms what that means. With this, I think there are a lot of different interpretations for what participating in a MOOC can look like. Somebody could be very engaged. Somebody could sign up for the course, attend one session, do nothing else. So it's one of the areas that I'm curious to watch the evolution as more programs are offering certificates and as people with those certificates find work. I think that that's where we will start to see some meaning evolve. And as we realize trends, hey, you know, all of these people who are coming out of this course with a certificate in coding for designers are really placeable people. Employers are loving them and snapping them up as quickly as they finish. I think that's the point at which the credential becomes a selling point. I don't think we're there yet, but I think it is interesting to look at what is showing up on people's resumes and track their results.
And presuming more and more people start showing up with these alternative credentials, sounds like you're going to be pretty open-minded in terms of how much weight they could carry with regard to employment and placement decisions.
Well, here's the thing about that. Like, I feel like, especially for us as an employer of record for thousands of people, our clients are coming to us because they need people with very specific skills and experience. We do look in part, and it may get us to perk up our ears if we see that someone went to RISD, for example. But that's not going to be enough, certainly, to get someone a job. Maybe there are entry-level type positions out there where if you come out of a Harvard or MIT or BU or whatever, a school that people recognize, then maybe they'll give you a shot at the interview. But really what matters to our clients is a portfolio. Like if we just said, oh yeah, this person took these MOOC, we'd love you to look at them. They'd say, well, I want to see what they did. Because when they show up here, they have to be able to do something. And I wrote an article about this for eRecruiter, but there are things in general you might be able to deduce about a person if you see a MOOC on their resume. And so like to Allison's point, MOOC completion rates, I think on average are like 7% or 5% or 2%, depending on stats you look at. And so, for example, if someone actually completed the MOOC and had a certificate of completion, and so that whole issue of certifications or what you get at the end of the course is still a big open question, even with the major MOOC platforms, that could at least tell you this person is diligent, this person's industrious, this person's going to come through on their commitments, they're going to be a hard worker. It might tell you some about the kind of soft skills of this person, but really what's going to matter and what actually matters to most employers is your actual experience and being able to show that you can actually do what you say you can do. And so that's why the assignments that we have people working on are geared to produce what could show up in your portfolio. So even coding for designers, you have to create a website and you have to create a mobile site. This is something you can show a person. This is something you can put in your portfolio and say, oh yeah, I did do a MOOC or whichever, something like 85% of people out there don't even know what a MOOC is. But if you say, look, I took a course online and this is what I was able to do and I did this mobile version of the site and I did the full web version, that's something that people can look at and say, okay, I know you can do it. So I think in general in this conversation around, well, are people going to take MOOCs seriously and that, you have to put it in the context of how do employers in general treat the education component of a resume. And like I said, it may be something that maybe helps you get a toe in the door, or it may be something that speaks to a certain level of ability, but it's never going to be the main thing that people are looking at. Employers care about experience and can you actually demonstrate that you can do something with the skills that you claim you have or have learned.
And you're in a unique industry that the people you're employing have tangible work products that they could put in a portfolio. I'm curious, since you're in the contracting and temporary personnel business, do you see any difference in how companies hiring full-time employees, maybe across different industries, are treating changes underway in education and credentialing?
I don't think that there is a difference from contract and full-time. At least as far as our process goes, we vet candidates as thoroughly as if we were hiring them on a full-time basis, because the reality is very often, you know, when we make a match, it's such a solid match that it ends up becoming a permanent position over time. So I think our philosophy and approach to it is probably very similar. I will say we tend to be a pretty innovative company and we tend to be early adopters. So maybe we're a little bit more progressive in terms of how we're looking at this and actually trying to take the reins and drive it a little bit. So that might be different. But I think over time, our experience will probably be aligned with what you see in the rest of the marketplace. I don't know, Matt, do you agree with that?
Yes, I agree with everything you say, Allison, first of all. But second of all, yeah, I think, so since, like I said, we're the employer of record for all the people who work for us. So to us, they really are full-time employees. And on top of it, though, we also have to be able to represent them to our clients as if that person was also going to potentially hire them full-time. So in a sense, I feel like our experience, our way of thinking about things probably mirrors what would happen if someone was applying directly to the company. I mean, I personally haven't seen big shifts yet. We've had online education in one form or another for a while now. I don't know that there is yet a online, whether it's University of Phoenix or I think, I want to say Southern New Hampshire has a university that has a certain percentage of their students are 100% online. I think the idea that you could get a degree from a place, if an employer cares about a college degree, the entry level, that is something that may distinguish people. As soon as you're talking about someone going into mid-level or management role or doing something specialized, again, employers before and into the future are going to care about what you actually do. So it may be the case that eventually people will say, oh, you got a bachelor's from University of Phoenix. That means the same thing to me as if you got it from a state school anywhere. I can see that being possible. I would say what's interesting to me about certain kind of certifications and credentials, I keep thinking back to like Microsoft, you know, they had pretty involved and they still do certification programs. And for certain basic tech operational jobs, it was almost like a union card. You had to have your Microsoft systems or network professional or whatever certification. It was just the cost of, what do they call, table stakes. That's what you needed to just get in. They won't even look at you if you don't have it. But then if you do have it, they're going to look at your experience. So it may be the case, and I think what we're going to find with MOOCs is the more MOOCs are really focused on very specific and sometimes very technical training, then that is going to be something that people are, at least they will say, okay, if you've taken this MOOC and you have something to show for it and you finished it and it shows that, yeah, you have basic mastery of HTML5 or you understand the principles and applications of responsive design, it's something that might get people to at least talk to you. But they're not going to talk to you about that stuff. They're going to talk to you about what have you actually done. Describe to me a situation like this that you're going to encounter in my organization. Tell me when you've done something similar. The credentials, they're usually just to get in the door, very rarely to actually land the job.
Okay, well, Allison, I'd like to thank you both for joining us here at Degree of Freedom.
Thanks. I feel liberated.
Thanks for having us. This is a great project.
That was Allison Farmer and Matthew Grant from Aquent, the people behind the new Gymnasium MOOC service. And before signing off, I'd like to use Gymnasium to talk about a subject that tends to come up whenever the business of MOOCs is discussed, the MOOC business model, or lack thereof. MOOCs, as most of you know, have been free. Whenever you've got a company whose strategy is based on building up millions of users by offering free stuff, the question that always arises is how such a huge audience can be monetized. Investors in for-profit MOOC companies eventually expect to see a return, and even nonprofits have the goal of becoming self-sustaining, meaning everyone is trying to figure out how to generate income from a user base that signed up to get something for nothing. The major MOOC providers have been experimenting with business models as frenetically as they've been experimenting with pedagogy, and so far we've seen secure graduation credentials, access to credit programs, and even souvenir sales as a means to extract revenue from end users. And behind the scenes, MOOC companies are experimenting with content licensing deals and outreach to recruiters as potential business-to-business revenue options. The reason I bring this up in the context of today's guests is that Aquent seems to be starting off with a clear business model in mind. For they make money whenever a talented individual signs up for their service and gets placed into a job. And if even a small percentage of people who sign up for Gymnasium decide to add themselves to Aquent's roster of talent, that can mean years of revenue in exchange for giving away development resources that might have otherwise been shared only with existing employees. Now, Gymnasium is currently offering just a single course, and companies can end programs like this as quickly as they start them. But of all the MOOC organizations I've talked to since starting this project, Aquent is the only one that seems to know how its altruism can turn into sustainable revenue. Something other companies counting on t-shirt sales to pay the bills might be able to learn from. And on that note, it's time to say goodbye. But only until next week when I'll be back with the next Degree of Freedom podcast.